Okay, this is Sarah Milligan with the Kentucky Historical Society interviewing Gay Holman. Today is October 30th, 2013, and this time I remembered to push record on the recorder instead of record pause, because we all do it. We want to talk a little bit about the college credits in the prison system in Kentucky. And Gay, just again, quickly for the record, just tell me a little bit about your background. You are from Louisville originally, but you've kind of moved around, but ended up back there. So just give a little brief background.
That's right. Well, I went, like I said, I went to a school at Birmingham Southern College in Alabama. And then I came back and started raising my family, and then went to University of Kentucky to graduate school. Mm-hmm. And so I've got my graduate work done there. And then I went back to Louisville in 1987 and began teaching as an adjunct both at JCC and at University of Louisville.
JCC, Jefferson Community College.
And then the next year, I was given a tenure track position at Jefferson Community College. Mm-hmm. So I've been there since then. And my very first class was in the prisons.
Yeah, in the prison system, which I think is really interesting because, and that was my question, when you said, yes, I will take this tenure track position at JCC, did they say, okay, you're going to be teaching the prison system? So,
well, I had, the year before I got the tenure track, I was an adjunct, mm-hmm. and that class I taught in the prison.
Oh.
And so I just fell in love with it immediately.
Is that the only classes you were teaching?
No. I would usually teach one in the prison and then however many.
Just like Sociology
campus.
101? Or?
101, Modern Social Problems. I taught a community course one semester where we studied the prison as a community.
Interesting. Yeah,
just whatever I taught downtown. I usually tried to teach the same thing downtown that I was teaching in that prison.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Well, so let's go through a little bit of the history of that program first, because I know, and then if it's okay, you might choose to leave some of your notes with the interview.
Okay.
That way they'll just be sort of written as well as just you talking
Good.
Through it.
Okay.
And someone can kind of backtrack if they need to.
Sure.
But let's talk a little bit, because it seems like we were talking about, it sounds like EKU had the first classes in the prison system?
We think so. Some notes that I took when I was still working, I'm retired now, and they said that they did, and I have some memory about EKU. They were doing those oral histories in the 70s, so I think that's right. But before I came here, I called Charlie McCombs last night, who was the first coordinator of our program, mm-hmm. and he doesn't remember. But the notes say that EKU had a class somewhere, mm-hmm. but they did not have any graduates.
With the Kentucky and Reformatory System.
I'm guessing. Yeah, I'm okay. guessing it was at KSR, or we wouldn't have started at the women's prison. So I don't know.
That's right, because JCC was going strictly uh-huh. at the beginning into the women's.
Uh-huh. Just for a year, but then after the first year, then they went over to KSR as well.
Yeah. So what year did the JCC start?
In 75 was the first program, and I mentioned that Angelo Barron, who was a teacher at JCC, heard on the radio about that the women at KSR, at KCIW, were wanting some stimulation of some sort. And so he went to our continuing education department, and they offered a class out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kept doing that. And then a year later, they went over to the reformatory and started the same thing. And the way they did it at first, if the women had, not the very first, but after a couple of times, if the women had the money to pay tuition, they would take it for credit, and the others were just kind of taking it for fun.
For fun.
Yeah. But in fall of 76, no, it was the next year, Charlie, the first man had left, and Charlie was seeing that things were not working too well. So he went to Ron Horvath, who was JCC's president and very, very supportive of the prison program. He was for years after that. Said how much it needed coordinating, and so he became the coordinator, the official coordinator in 77.
Charlie McCombs did.
And then at that point, it was kind of an official college program. It moved from the continuing education to the academic side of things.
So do you have any idea what the sort of issues with it were in the first 2 years?
Well, one was funding, but textbooks, how to provide the textbooks, and like he said, the first class he taught, they asked him to teach, it was modern social problems, and he asked them how many had had Sociology 101, which is the prerequisite. Nobody did. So it was that sort of thing. It just wasn't, mm-hmm. they were just picking classes. But so, and at that point, then you do it in sequence and the way it should be handled academically.
So primarily sociology courses?
No. It just happens that both he and I are sociologists, which works well, though. I think it makes it easy. But the current coordinator is a math person. But no, we offered everything, and from so that they could work on a degree. So mm-hmm. you'd start with English 101 and go on through. Mm-hmm. He said when it first started at the reformatory especially, it was considered a real, real honor to be allowed to take the classes, and that they couldn't have any write-ups for 3 months beforehand, and they had to be chosen to take it. And the parole board was really looking at it, and you know, it was almost on automatic parole if you could do the college program. But then someone that was back in the time of that consent decree, and so someone filed a suit that education was being withheld from them. And so from then on, anyone that could work it out could come, mm-hmm. as long as they were somewhat well-behaved. I mean, they had to have a decent, but yeah. the facility couldn't pick and choose who they let come anymore.
Mm-hmm. And when did that change, do you remember? It
was before I came.
Okay, so before 88, before 87.
Yeah, back then.
I could see why that would cause a problem.
Yeah, it did. He mentioned that, just for the record, some people that were really influential, and I noticed some of them had been interviewed in those
the EKU collection.
James Thompson at KCIW and Dave Vislacel at KSR. And Dave Vislacel is still around, and he later went to Luckett. And then Jamie Phillips, I didn't know him. And then, of course, Betty Kosalke, who was the lady for the women for so long.
So what did all those folks do?
Well, Betty Kosalke was a warden, as was Al Parks, and the other ones were principals of the school, because they had a school there, you know, for GED sort of programs and some vocational things. So each place had a principal, but they were with the college program.
Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about the layout of the classroom. So you said that you taught one downtown, which the JCC campus, and then you taught one in the prison system.
Yeah.
So you would go to the...
You'd drive out to either Pee-wee Valley for the women or the reformatory in LaGrange. And then they also spread over to Luther Luckett, which is all on that same property.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I took over, we went to Roederer and some other places. I'll talk about that in a minute. But I think the first part, it was so interesting. Charlie talked about the very first time when they started the classes at the reformatory. They have an old school that was built back in the 30s or something, but then it was just a big open place. Now it's all divided into offices and classrooms and everything. But one would sit at one end, one teacher would sit at one end, and one would sit at the other in this open room, and they'd have to talk over each other. And the current president of Jefferson Community College is Tony Newberry, and he was one of the first. He was a young history teacher down at school at that time, and so he would sit at one, Charlie would be at the other.
So they would have two classes at the same time?
Yeah, in the same room, yeah. Hmm. So, and then what I remember the most about the early days at KCIW, the women's facility, is they had this intercom system, and it, no matter who was needed where, it would all come over the intercom. So you'd be teaching this class with this intercom continuously going on, you know, so-and-so needs to go here, and somebody's needed the laundry, or it was a nightmare. And big poles in the middle of the room. It just was a terrible teaching facility.
Mm-hmm.
But
so what did you think the first time you went in? Because it seems to me that's sort of a big shift. I mean, there's a lot more security. There's a lot more procedure. I mean, just maybe like walk me through what your memories are of the first time that you went there to teach.
Well, I had gone out for a little orientation session, so I knew where I was going, but they left it to me to get there, and you have to walk across the whole yard. You go in through all these clanging. It's pretty intimidating, although that's not what I remember the most about it. I was told to be there at a certain time, only it turned out that I was told the wrong time. So when I got there, all the men were sitting out in the open room in the hallway, and the officer was furious. He was so mad. And so he yelled at me and fussed at me, and it scared me half to death. So I wasn't the least bit scared of the men, but I was really scared of this officer.
So he yelled at you for being there?
Being late.
Oh, because you were late.
But I didn't know I was late.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was really mean. But the men were all really nice to me, and I think they saw I was a little tense. And I remember, I can remember it specifically, who one of them was. They quietly turned to someone when class was over and said, "Don't you think we ought to walk her out to the front gate so that she won't be scared?" Because it was dark, and KSR is a spooky place, and it is dark. So they didn't know, they didn't say, "We're going to walk you because you're scared." But I heard them say that. And I thought, oh, that just kind of set a nice tone that they cared for me. And would take care of me, and they did.
That's interesting.
It's everything's turned upside down, you know.
How so?
Well, you see such a good side of the people that have done so much harm, and it's quite a contrast, and that has been sort of the most interesting and the most touching part of that, and I think I've seen some of the meanest, awfulest things happen that have been from the people that were supposed to be doing good towards them. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's just been an interesting journey.
Yeah. Well, I think it is interesting that the first time you went in to teach a class, you weren't worried about being in the facility. You were more just agitated by, you know, being thrown out, given the wrong information.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, that's not true. You know, when I would take the teachers in every time, it just became so comfortable for me over the years. But some of them would get just really freaked by the clanging of the gates or the shutting of the doors. And when they got on the yard, you knew you were there and you weren't getting out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And so some were very upset about that.
I understand. Yeah. So were you ever nervous about any of your time there?
That's really odd, but I was never scared. Never. I always had the feeling that the men would protect me if anything happened. And I talked with some staff people about that, and they said I was right, that they felt very sure. I remember one time that they put me someplace to do registration, and frankly, it isn't where what they should have done. They put me someplace with no officer or anything. I was just out in a building and isolated. And the men didn't like that. The men in our program, and they said they shouldn't have put you here. And so at the end it was hassly, and also I just kind of put them all outside and then had to come in one at a time, and I could tell that some of them didn't think that was the thing, and I noticed that they stood outside making sure I didn't get, nothing would happen to me.
Interesting.
So I've always felt, now somebody from corrections would say she's naive, but I did it 20 years. I just never felt scared. If I had to do something, if there was a little problem in a classroom or something, I remember one time there was kind of a volatile student. I made sure that when I talked to him that an officer was outside the door. He was plagiarizing, I thought. And so I just didn't know. And he wasn't a real stable man. So.
Yeah.
But that's the only time.
Out of 20 years, that's the only time. That's amazing.
Only time.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So how did... I guess that's a good question, because we started with that originally the classes were sort of a reward system, but then it was required that it was open up to anybody who wanted to or had the money to sort of fund. So it seems to me, did you tend to have people that took those classes that really wanted to, or was it just a way to kind of like kill time and do something?
Well, before I forget, let me think of one point when you said about that. Very soon after they got the classes going, mm-hmm. the Pell Grants were available. And so their tuition was paid for through Pell Grants. It wasn't...
So about what point in the late 70s?
I think it was right... I looked up when the Pell Grants started. So, and Charlie thinks it was... Once he took over as coordinator, it was Pell Grant paid.
Oh, so it was that quickly? Mm-hmm. So it was in the...
I think so, yeah.
Okay. So if they wanted to, they applied for a Pell Grant, they could get funding that way? Or did the university apply, or did the community college apply?
It was always such a nightmare. We'd have the financial aid people. I don't know how Charlie did, but when I was it, the financial aid people would come out and help them with the forms, because they're just nightmarish forms. And then you'd have to
But the school, inmate would have to apply in the school, but the school would provide the resources to help them.
To help them do that. And then we just did all the processing and all. I'm thinking of other things, and I forgot what you asked me.
I had asked you if students tended to want to be there, or if they were just there to kill time, because they could.
Of course, there were a few, but mostly they just were desperate to be there. And they were wonderful students. You can't find a teacher that didn't love teaching there. Once they got up the nerve to come in, it was hard to ever, they just always wanted to come back, because the students were so good. They always read the textbooks. They studied hard. I went for two semesters in a row. I ran a study, and I compared. I did everything exactly the same from downtown and the prison. Same tests, same everything. And that consistently the test scores were a grade level higher in the prison than downtown. And it's hard to explain. I mean, of course there were exceptions, you know. And of course there were people that dropped out, but they didn't drop out nearly at the rate that they did downtown. And there were just so many different touching things. And I brought you some things, some statements from the people that they had written in here that I'll leave.
Fantastic.
Leave for the record of the difference that the college program made to their, the way they looked at themselves. Mm-hmm. I suspect that getting an associate's degree didn't help them much in getting a job when they got out. Probably the vocational would have helped more, but it changed the way they thought of themselves, and therefore it changed their lives. And nationally, during all this time, there was an attempt to do some research about it, and indeed, people that were able to take the college level classes didn't come back to prison very often. Way lower than the other.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you made a comment earlier that once they got up the nerve to come in, maybe explore that a little bit. No, sounds like the inmates.
No, I was talking.
You were talking about
the teachers.
Okay.
The teachers would always want to come back.
I see.
Yeah. But it took the men some nerve to come in as well, because, I'm not telling you I'm telling you what I find the most interesting, but it's not really the history of the.
You know, it all is. I mean, it's your perspective.
Well, one of the things we used to do for graduation, and graduation was a big deal, kind of pitiful, but a big deal. And so we would always let the person with the highest grade point average would be the valedictorian, and they'd give a little speech. Mm-hmm. And there was one older man, he was from the mountains, and he really had a country accent, and he was a grizzled old guy, but he got it. And so I remember telling him, and he must have been in his 50s, and tears welded up in his eyes, and they started dripping down his cheeks, and then he just looked at it on the floor, and he said, "They always told me I was stupid." And I'll never forget that. It just broke my heart.
Yeah.
And they've told so many stories of awful, awful school experiences they'd had. And so often they were the first person in their entire family that had ever gone to college. And mm-hmm. They were, you know, they'd been the black sheep of the family, but here they were doing something good. And mm-hmm. and some of them were trying to do it for their children's sake. And mm-hmm. it just was. Graduations were always tearful, and the faculty always came out, and the president always said, if there was only one graduate, he would be there. They were wonderful. They all came in caps and gowns, and you know, we tried to make a big deal out of it.
So, about how many people did you have in a class?
It would depend on the prison, but anywhere from 12 to 25, maybe more. I'm trying to think. It kind of depended again on the prison and what classroom facilities they had.
Mm-hmm. So. And how many classes would you have in a week, you think?
Well, at the height, I do have those figures. We had like 10 classes going at This is during my time when things were.
Your time. When you say your time, okay, like, I'm sorry. What is the time frame?
88 to 2008.
Okay.
But I became the coordinator in 91. And let me explain this because I've got to be fair too. At this point, there were some of the other prisons were having college programs as well. And this Pell Grant thing, I think this is interesting. The Pell Grant thing became a cash cow for colleges. Mm-hmm. So colleges were pouring in corrections, trying to get into the facilities. So at our places, I know some of them were Northwood, Lindsay Wilson, Lees College, Campbellsville. And then I'm sure that some of the prisons in other parts of the states had other schools. And it was a mess. It was a total mess because corrections is really good at moving people around. They just move inmates all over the place. The men, now I'm talking about the women's state. And so they'd start, maybe they'd take four classes from us and get some credits. Then they go to another school and they wouldn't be offering the right classes. And so they would just, they'd have, you just wouldn't know how many credit hours they'd get, and they still didn't get a degree out of it. And it was very aggravating from our point of view, and I'm not speaking specifically of any one of these that I mentioned, but some of them just, their programs were terrible. I mean, they weren't following. So the Council on Higher Ed got involved, and so they decided we had to come up with a common curriculum. And that was the worst committee I'd ever been on in my whole life. We'd come down here to Frankfurt, and there'd be representatives from all the schools, and that's where I got to know Tony Newberry. He was the assistant chancellor of the, by then we were the Kentucky, what, KCTCS.
Mm-hmm. Kentucky Community Technical College System.
Yes. And so just trying to force, you know, they would have different, math would be a big one. You know, some would require college algebra and some would require things that we considered developmental, and it was just a mess. So we hammered on that. And the week after we finally signed an agreement, they ended the Pell Grants nationwide. So
this wasn't that long ago then. That wasn't that long
before.
It was in
94.
Oh, okay. No, that
okay.
Was.
Well, the crime bill ended all the Pell Grants, all funding to incarcerated students everywhere. And so
what
they gave us
bill?
A year. It was called the Crime Bill, the National Crime Bill Act.
Okay.
And in the 90s, I think that's one of the interesting things. When I say my time, I think about all in that 90s period.
Sure.
Things were different in society, they still are, but people were so hostile about crime. When you'd ask the main concerns in the nation, it would always be crime. And that there was so much punitive stuff, and the sentences started getting longer and longer, and that's when Kentucky just started flooding their prisons full of people. You know, now we're considered one of the most incarcerating states, but that's kind of when it happened. So there was such an anger going on then. And people were furious about people receiving college credit in prison. So we had that fight to fight all the time. Mm-hmm. And we had it to fight within the institutions because the officers, their kids were having to go out and work several jobs, and some of them were making too much money for their kids to get Pell Grants. They were really mad. So you were always fighting fights the whole time, fighting fights with everybody mm-hmm. and on the outside. So. Anyway, so they passed this bill nationwide that ended them, and then Kentucky, to make sure that some of the states picked up the bills. They wanted to make sure that didn't happen in Kentucky, so they passed a law in Kentucky that no state money could be used for it. So all of these little other schools, and they gave us 1 year to finish up a program. They let us have 94, 95. Yeah, 94, 95, you can finish. And some just left immediately. They just closed up in
the colleges.
Yeah, didn't even finish the semester out. Then the 94-95 semester, just we were the only ones that stayed. And some of the men doubled up. There was some man taking 24 hours of credit so he could graduate. We had a big graduation.
One semester?
Uh-huh. I mean, it was just they worked themselves to death. They were very proud of it. But we did everything. We, you know, teachers downtown agreed to do classes by correspondence, and we just really went to it.
So, so maybe at this point too, let's just move, because we're already there. Like, when you started becoming the coordinator for the for this program for JCC in 1991, so what did that shift you? You moved from teaching sociology in a tenure track position, and part of your teaching load was to teach in the prison system. And then 1991, what changed?
Okay. I didn't teach as many classes downtown. A regular teacher teaches 5 classes, and so I got release time. I got released from 3, so I just had to teach 2 classes. That happened. And then at the end of my teaching time, I didn't teach anything for the last couple of years because it was getting bigger and bigger then. But
the prison system?
The program, yeah. Because then we expanded to Roederer, and then we expanded over to the Dismas facilities.
Okay, so like 2004, 2005, but that's later on, right?
That's later on, yeah.
So, so in 1991, when you took up the coordinator mm-hmm. position for Jason, and that you took over after Charlie McComb?
That's right.
Okay.
And then this thing ended. And
in 94, 95.
And I should mention that at Eastern Kentucky Correctional Complex, somewhere up in the north, Warden Michael O'Day did a whole lot. And they had 150 students at the end of that. So they also had programs. I'm just not prepared to talk about them because I don't know what they
It seems really like, yeah, it seems like we're focusing more intensely on the KRS, Kentucky Reformatory School, or,
Kentucky State Reformatory.
Kentucky State, yeah. Sorry.
And the women's.
KSR, not KRS.
Yeah.
Kentucky State Reformatory, which is part of the Kentucky Reformatory System, so.
No, that, it, no.
Isn't it?
No.
No, okay.
No. It's a prison. It's one of the, well, at that time, it was the largest prison in Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
And then Luther Luckett is another very large prison that people don't know about, which is on the same grounds.
Okay.
And Roederer is, at the time, was a farm facility, but now it's the intake facility, and that's all on the same property, but Sarah and LaGrange.
So those are, I mean, but that's what I guess what I was getting at. They're all this sort of centralized location
in around Louisville.
Around Louisville.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's where you all focus, which makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. At some point, they went down and took over Western Kentucky, but that's later on.
JCC.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's part of that KCTCS thing.
Okay.
But what's, to me, the most interesting, and one reason I would love to have this on thing, is what happened when there was no college programming.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's the best example, or one of the best examples I've heard of grassroots really making a difference.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Hold on, let me clarify something real quick. When you say when there was no college programming, but everybody drew out but JCC.
Yes. But then we had to drop out because there was no, they gave it 1 year of funding, 1 more year of funding to finish, yeah. And that's when we finished up. So then in 95-96 school year, there was no college programming any place in Kentucky. And very little
in any of the
United States, in any prisons.
Okay.
Across the, so this was a big source of contention and upsetness and everything. So we just kind of thought, well, there's nothing to do about it because mm-hmm. you have to have funding. And so I got a call from Susan Kessinger, who was the principal at Luther Luckett at the time, sometime in that year. And she said, there's some men here that say that they can pay the tuition, and I think I've got enough to have a class. Could you come out and talk to us about it? So I went out, and there certainly was the interest among the men. But when it came right down to it, their families didn't come through with the money. They really didn't have the money. But they got me interested, and they're just, you know, I knew them and all that, and so you just kind of want to help. So I thought, well, how hard could this be? Because tuition was only $144 a semester then. Changed a lot now. But so I just went out and started finding people to sponsor them. So, you know, when I went to my poor elderly mother and said, can you pay for one man to go to college for one semester? And went to the church, and the church cut a couple and other friends. And then I think Susan may have done some of the same things. So we got enough that we had a class. And so then the second semester, we were doing the same thing, cobbling it together, and I found some places to raise some money that gave us some money. And then the institutions agreed to buy the books. See, that was a nice combination.
So the prison they were in bought the books?
Bought the books. They couldn't do it with state money. So they figured out they had to do it with canteen money. You know, with the canteen.
But go ahead and explain it.
The canteen is where they go to buy things. It's their store. And so that pays for all of the things that people get mad about. But
like what?
Oh, well, like the athletic equipment, cable TV. None of that is paid with state money. People think it is, but it's not. It comes through. It's the money they have put.
The inmates.
They make a huge fortune through these canteens. The prices are so jacked up.
So, the inmates. But the prison system runs a canteen. The inmates buy snacks and whatever from it with their own money, and then the money from that gets used however the prison wants to, or however the inmates want to.
No, it's the, how the prison wants it. So, and there's a canteen foundations. A corrections thing. But anyway, so then the Associated Press heard about it, and a reporter named Jane Gibson came in November of 96, and she wrote a first article about North Point. She went up to North Point and wrote about, not North Point, EKCC, the Eastern Kentucky Correctional Complex.
Correctional Complex,
wherever that is, yeah. And then she also wrote a second one about us and our program. Uh-huh. And she said just at the last minute, she decided to put a little sidebar in that if anybody was interested, here's how you contact it. Well, I started getting calls. I got calls from all over the state. Churches all over said, well, we can sponsor one person. And so it became sort of it's legitimate for it to be a state because these guys and women come from all over the state. And so there were just a whole variety of places that started sponsoring. And then people would start giving larger amounts of money. And one time we were desperate. We just didn't have enough for everybody to go. And I opened up the mail, and there was a $10,000 check from a foundation in North Carolina. And so a friend who had been sponsoring somebody mentioned to her good friend who ran this, and they had some money left, and so they sent it to us. So, I mean, it's really been, you can look at it any way you want to, about how money has shown up at the most unusual times that it was needed. Mm-hmm. But, so anyway, we just kind of kept raising money. I'd raise maybe $10,000 a year or something. And at first, I left out a piece of it, an important piece.
No, go ahead.
I'm trying to think how to, and where it fits in. About that time, we had started coming back, if I can stop
you're
right
fine.
There.
Okay, no, okay. You're fine. You do not have to be chronological.
Okay, well, it kind of needs to be here.
Okay.
So, in summer of 1996, I taught at the Governor's Scholars Program. You know what that is? Mm-hmm. That's the rising seniors in Kentucky.
High school seniors.
And rising
high school seniors.
And it was at Center College where I taught. And so it was social, political, and economic theory class. And so we had them study the college program. And
the college program in the prisons, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
About prisons and all. And so people from corrections came to talk to them. I had a manuscript that I'd written that they used. We worked it out for them to go to North Point, which is a nearby prison, and they made toys with some of the inmates, and then we gave it to some poor children, so that they could interact on a personal basis. And so they produced a report. And so after they had questioned all these people and we went all these places, they decided how maybe this could be funded. And so I put the report in here in case you're interested in that.
So let me see if I can, let me see if I got that right. So you taught a course at the Governor's Scholars Program, which is a summer program. Mm-hmm. And for your assignment for the class, it was to evaluate the college and the prison system's program and make a recommendation on sort of how it could survive, like how it could get funding, right?
Right.
So I have one question before I find out what it was, but did anybody have issues with you taking high school students into the prison?
Their parents all signed permission slips, so that was no problem at all. And I had to meet with the deputy warden beforehand. They gave them a perimeter tour. They wouldn't take them through the prison, so they took them around the outside of the prison and talked to them. But then they did arrange for us to, I don't know, it wasn't the visiting room, but they let them go inside, but it wasn't totally. All the places have places like visiting rooms that aren't totally inside. So, and so we met there. Places where they were locked in, though. I mean, we had to go through security and all that. Mm-hmm. But no.
Interesting. Okay. So, what was the recommendation?
Okay. Well, they recommended. Well, what they did is they took this to the governor, to Governor Patton.
The students did?
Yes, we went and met with him. And
did you arrange that? Was that part of the class?
Yeah. So, anyway. Their solution didn't work in the long run, but they were going to have correctional industries give money. And the man, head of correctional industries, thought they could do that as a donation. So anyway, we presented it to Governor Patton. And then, of course, the central office had been involved in some coming to talk to our class and all. This is the Central Office of Corrections. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't too long after that that I got a call from, I'm blanking on his name. It was the commissioner at the time.
The commissioner of the prison system?
Tom Campbell. Mm-hmm. And he asked me to come to Frankfort. So I went, and he said, if a bunch of high school students can figure out how to fund this program, we sure as heck can. So he kind of started greasing some skids for me. And Carol Shirley, and I don't know if she was Carol Shirley then or Carol Williams, she got married in there. She was the deputy warden in charge of, deputy commissioner. And so what you have then is support at the very top saying, I want this to work. So while they didn't jump in with a solution, they sure made it so that the individual prisons felt a need to cooperate. So that was interesting.
Did they offer a framework for them to do that within?
That's when they came up with the idea of using, I think that is, when they came up with the idea that they could furnish the books, because that was a big deal. And
you did the GSP in 96, is that right?
Yeah.
So
I did it in 97 too, but I did the prison thing in 96.
That was clever.
Yeah, it worked. and I can't, I'm having trouble remembering just what they did to make things easy, because we went on in that kind of patchwork thing for years, you know, trying to find ways. But they started cooperating more, and the school.
The prison system did?
Yeah, everybody did. The school would help pay the for the developmental classes. They weren't allowed to waive.
So JCC?
JCC, yeah. No, let's see. Let me remember. I'm sorry. The prison paid the salaries of the developmental teachers. Those are the ones for the math teachers where the students weren't up to par. Mm-hmm. And so the institution paid that, but then the school didn't have to charge tuition for them in that case, because they were developmental. So the school could kind of waive those costs.
Okay.
So that's how we handled developmental stuff for a while. And there were just a lot of ways that I've forgotten, frankly, all the details of the ins and outs. But the bottom line is you had the community, and that was the big deal. When they finally saw how much the community was supporting it, because that's what they're the most scared of, is, you know, the community will get mad about all of it. But the community.
Who's they? The prison system?
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially back then when everybody was so hostile. I mean, you know. So that, and then the men and women started paying good faith money. So they had to pay $20 for a class. But for some of them, that was more than a month's salary. You know, they get paid 85 cents a day.
So
that
the inmates had to pay
a piece.
Good faith money. And how did that work out?
I mean, well, they had to, I mean, it got to be a nightmare in terms of administration of it all. But it would come out of their canteen fund. And so they paid that.
So they would just pay $20 for a class?
Uh-huh.
Who would pay the rest of it?
Well, the money that we raised with the sponsors.
Okay.
And so it just, that whole period is such a kind of a blur still as we were developing it and getting it more and more. And then after a while then, the prison started picking up all of the tuition with the canteen money.
Oh.
Yeah. And then in the later years, the Pell Grants were changed just a little bit so that they had the youthful offender grant, so that people under 25 were paid for by the government.
They could apply for Pell Grants. I mean, none of this was automated. I mean, everything still had a process. There was an application.
The nightmare of it all. Yeah, and then getting the books in and out.
So did they have to do anything in order to be accepted into the JCC program?
No more than the downtown students.
So what was that?
They had to have a GED, and that's what you have to have downtown. Mm-hmm. And you can't take certain classes. If you test into developmental classes, you have to take the developmental classes first.
So you gave them a test to see where they were at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did all. They were treated as much like our regular students as possible. And that caused a lot of chaos for me at times, because the prison had their set of rules and then we had our set of standards, and it just didn't always match. And the people that I would have to deal with, like the officers and all, they would just be against us totally. So there was always a fight there. So then you'd always have to go up to move your way up the ladder. And the people, the warden and deputy warden, were usually intelligent, and not the officers are intelligent too, but educated. They knew what college meant and what you had to do in college. Then you've made people mad because you had to go up over the top.
Yeah.
So we went through that a lot.
Well, that's like you mentioned that the guards were were a little bit disgruntled because a lot of times their kids didn't have an easy, paid-for way into college. So maybe talk a little bit about how that manifested itself. Like, how did you know that? How did you know they were mad?
They'd say so. And they'd say they shouldn't be allowed this. I don't know how many times I've been told they shouldn't be allowed to go to college. And then they'd tell the people straight to their face and say, you shouldn't be doing this. And when they were studying, you know, you're too dumb, you can't do that. But of course if the administration had known any of that was happening, they'd have sat on them. But a lot happens behind the scenes, and you just have to kind of keep quiet and listen.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a suspicion of people from the outside coming in. And when I first started...
Who's suspicious? The guards or the inmates?
Mostly the officers. There is a lot that goes on between staff and inmates, and there's a lot of sex in a prison. I probably shouldn't put this on tape, but it's kind of the truth. And I don't think corrections would like that to be said, but it's true. And so there's always those problems. Well, then you have these new people coming in, and our teachers were naive, and they did only see the very best of the inmates, and they did see the very best side of them. And so they were overly sympathetic of the men, and the officers didn't like that. And so they were always telling them terrible things about the inmates to make them...
The teachers telling the teachers.
Telling the teachers, yeah. I remember I was allowed to take... They were very nice to let me do what things I needed to do. I took my classes downtown out there, and we had joint classes once a semester. And one time I went, and the guard that escorted us back got a bunch of my students to the side, and he said, everybody in that class is a baby raper. Well, they were also upset because they thought it was true. And of course it was. But, I mean, it was that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They just tried to scare them.
They pulled one student away from your class, or just all of them?
A little bunch, a little knot of them, and said, you don't know what you're getting into. They're all baby papers. So there are things like that just went on, and you just had to learn to deal with it. And then, for a geography class, there was such a big deal over getting a topographical map in, because maps, of course, aren't allowed in. But a topographical map of the United States is way different than an Oldham County roadmap. So, you know, you had to go take care of that. And then we had a geography class, our geology class. And there's just certain things you have to have. You had to have hydrochloric acid. Well, that's a total no-no. So we had to go through this huge deal about how you could lock it up and where it could be locked up and how you could access it. So always that sort of thing.
Did the administration or somebody go through your curriculum before you started it just to make sure that what you were teaching was not prohibited against their regulations?
Well, no. And that was something that was just a constant fight, depending on who was in charge, because they changed staff all the time. So you'd get somebody that was really cooperative and you could just talk to them. But that was my job, is to make sure that the teachers knew what they were doing, they knew where they were, that they were conscious of what they were doing. But we also encouraged it to be just like the class downtown as much as possible. But there were times where whoever was in charge of the thing at the time would say, no, they can't see any movies unless I've seen them first. Well, you know, other times they'll say, okay, Gay, you know, use your judgment. Yeah, mm-hmm. So. It depended who was you were working with.
But for the most part, so it really sounds like it depended on your relationship with the administrative staff.
And that was such a big deal about it, yeah. And I'm sure that I irritated them a whole lot, but I still think I ended up friendly with almost all of them in the long run. I think we respected each other. We butted heads. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about it, to me it's interesting as a sociologist, is the You can't put correctional system with a educational system. They're totally opposite. Corrections is a real tall bureaucracy with you never jump over one another, and there's so many layers, and everybody is so obedient to the people above them. And then the educational, we're like herding cats. And if a teacher gets upset about something, you can get an appointment with the president. I mean, it's no big deal. You put those two together and tell a professor that he can't do something that seems totally reasonable, then they were always upset about something. Mm-hmm. But we worked it out, and so for so many years, I feel real pleased with all of us that we
good
that we got it going and did a good job.
So how did you choose what teachers you were going to send into the prison system?
Well, you had to look at what classes you needed for the degree and how long it had been since it had been offered. And then you just kind of got to know the teachers and who was sympathetic and who you thought would be, you know, teachers have reputations among each other. So you'd kind of pick who you thought was the best and the most interesting. So I really think they had a good deal because they really got our better teachers, I think.
You ever have anybody tell you that they didn't want to do it?
Oh, yeah. If they had to think about it too long, you knew that it wasn't the right person. So, because, like me, as soon as you said it, it just sounded like, oh, how interesting, how fun, and that's how most of the ones did. And if they had to think about it too much, you knew they'd be scared.
I mean, I can understand that. It's just so much this unknown for most people,
yeah,
I would guess.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, so you were in charge of it from 91 to 2008. Uh-huh. So I think we got sort of chronologically backing up a little bit. So once you kind of got the prison to buy into it and they were able to sort of shift a lot of the canteen money towards sponsoring the students, is that still the way it's done? Or when you left in 2008, was it still?
Yes, but they're struggling now, and I don't want to speak too much about it because I'm on purpose away from it.
Sure.
But the real education people left, the ones that were so interested in education. And
you mean from the prison administration?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. They kind of dismantled a lot of things. Larry Chandler, who was the warden at KSR, had built up this enormous educational system, not just with the college program, but with everything. And it didn't take long for that to get dismantled. But now they're still doing it, but it shrunk way down. At the women's prison, there aren't as many of those. The institutions are not letting us use the scholarship money like we did before. They want to have all of the control of it. So when I was the coordinator, I always fought to make sure that if anybody wanted to go, and it was, they would not be denied a chance to go because of money. That was my goal. And they've kind of stopped that now. They will decide who can go and who can't.
So it's basically going back to 1975.
Yeah, but not quite as much. It's the funding. I mean, they can't say you can't go because of, we don't want you to go, but yeah.
But they can say we've only got enough money to send 10 people,
and they'll choose whoever, yeah. But they still have a pretty good-sized program. I think they said, last I heard, there were like 70 at KSR, and I don't know. I better not guess. It's not the same size.
When you say it's in a class, does that mean a class of English or a class of students? Or
no, what do you mean?
Because there are a couple of times you've referenced that, and sort of the same thing. It's like when you say there's 70 of them, or we got a class together. Does a class mean like these students will take X amount of classes and in 2 years they all graduate together?
No, that never happens.
Okay.
No, a class would mean like an English class or a history class or a...
Okay, so just enough to do like one...
One class, yeah. Usually there was money, they could only take two classes a semester.
Okay.
And if they were getting really, really close, then three.
Except when there were Pell Grants, and then they could take...
They could take as many as
24.
Yeah. Yeah. But, so it took them forever to get a degree.
Okay.
Yeah. But they worked hard. Now, where it's expanded beyond, we were at Roeder, they still got classes at Roeder, but then we expanded over into the Dismas facilities, and those are community corrections. They're still incarcerated, but they're able to go to the community. So they go downtown to campus.
Mm-hmm.
And now, because the technical school is all combined, they can take technical classes or... And so mm-hmm. we're still running all of that down there. So, and there's a lot of... I mean, that's grown leaps and bounds. I don't know how many students they've got.
So who funds those students? Do you know?
Now, let me think. How are they doing that now? The young ones get Pell Grants. Oh, I know. I remember. It's another story, but they get Pell Grants. And there was, I've forgotten when it was, not too long before I left, there was an argument because some states were allowing people in those facilities to get Pell Grants, and others weren't letting anybody get Pell Grants. And so we had a national conversation. I talked to this guy in Frankfurt in the Department of Education numerous times. And so they finally went around and redefined what community corrections was so that it made them eligible for Pell Grants. So, and that kind of spread around the nation, I mean, because we got a definitive argument on that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good.
So you all basically said this is part of community education and this is how this fits into it, or what?
No, it's community custody. You've heard of maximum, medium, mm-hmm. minimum security. There's a lower custody is community custody.
Oh.
So they're still prisoners.
I didn't understand.
Yeah,
you were just talking about community custody.
Yeah,
okay, so I thought you were talking about the prison systems in general, like the overall region.
No,
just that.
No, that's a particular custody level.
Right.
And so there's five of those in Louisville, and they come out and go to our classes downtown.
Right.
So they can take those. And then I will say the other thing that our little program in Louisville then, that model spread to the other institutions around the state.
For example?
Well, I think.
The other prison systems?
Yeah.
Other prisons?
Prisons in Kentucky.
Yeah.
So that the college program got back in all the places using the same thing.
Who was teaching the classes?
KCTCS people. We had all of them then.
So by that point, so the... Right, so
But they use the model that we used.
At JCC.
Yeah. So, I hope I've been fair to everybody, because I can't speak did I mention that Larry Chandler had started a program down at Green River, a small program, but the men all had to pay their own way there. That was before.
Was that in the early 70s?
Yeah. No, it was right after the Pell Grants ended, so he was able to get it started, but then
Well, and you mentioned that the writer came through and wrote about the Eastern Kentucky Correctional Center and then the JCC program together. So was the Eastern Kentucky doing classes as well, continuing classes after that?
But they were the ones that they had to pay themselves to.
Okay.
So, but we didn't have them pay themselves.
I was going to say, you were fundraising for that.
Yeah.
How long did that continue, fundraising?
Pretty long time. You can look in here and see.
Up until
almost to the end. Well, they were still doing when I left, because there were if people needed to take more than two classes, or if the institution wouldn't, there were cases where they said, I'm not gonna pay for that guy, and so I'd say, okay, I'll take him if you'll take this one. And we just sit down and
they would be fine with that if you wanted to pay for it.
Yeah, and then there'd be some people that just could not pay the good faith money. They were indigent and they just didn't have it, and so they'd let us pay that. Or we all had clerks, and so they would let us give them a free scholarship. So things like that.
So you turned that fundraising into a scholarship program. Is that how you did it?
Yeah, that's basically what it was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I just think it's an interesting study of what you can do if you just get a lot of people cooperating, you know, and everybody working together. It's quite heartwarming.
What I think is interesting is that part of the story started with this period of time where the general public was just really angry about crime and anything that they could be perceived as a perk of somebody who was in prison serving time for a crime. But then the response to taking that away was a bunch of community members and organizations replacing that money with private dollars. So it couldn't have been 100%, I mean, it never is, but it couldn't have been complete anger from the community.
No, it wasn't. It's like anything. It's always the vocal ones. And then once you start getting people to know, you had to bring faces to the people. And you'll see in these things I have here where they've written. Mm-hmm. And I took groups in for a whole variety. And
what kind of groups did you take in?
The prisons were really good about that. Mostly church groups, but not to the chapel program. We did a thing called, for about 10 years, called Aunt Mary's Book Project, where some of the women from my church would go in and we'd take tape recorders in. They were allowed tape recorders in and children's books, and the men could read the books to their children, and then we mailed the tape and the book to their children.
Mm-hmm.
And so that certainly won over all those women, because when they saw the men sitting there recording and crying, it's quite touching. And brought groups in for something we called Mission Possible, and they met with them, and we went in the carpentry shop, and the guy heading up he agreed to come in, you know, and help us, and they made toys, and the men knew how to use the carpentry stuff, so they cut things and all us getting ready, and then we all just kind of sat around and sanded or painted or whatever together, and so they just got to talk and interact,
and then
those to charity.
And that was the carpentry guy from JCC?
Yeah, although it wasn't him that stayed, he let us use his carpentry shop, but one of the other vocational teachers took his Saturday off and came in.
Okay.
And let, so it was a lot of cooperation, but the key behind getting people to help and understand how important it is to do rehabilitation is to let them see that these are human beings on the other end of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked more about the men than I have the women. I don't mean to. The women are important too, but people are not as scared of the women, nor are they as punitive about the women, because they see them as victims. And they're not always victims. But people are really scared of the men, and so things get cut for the men much faster than they do for the women. So I found my interest heading that way. But
So did you ever have any resistance when you were bringing in groups to do other charitable activities and also get them to know the inmates? Did you ever have resistance from the prison or the administration? Or
not the administration, because the administration's who had to approve it, and they were quite good about that, and I think they understood. The wardens were really quite exceptional, and they understood the need to have community support. And I guess they trusted me by that time. You know, I hadn't done anything to break too many rules or anything, so I guess there was a matter of trust there. Mm-hmm. But some of the officers didn't like it. I mean, you just never get beyond that. So
did you have, other than the first time, did you have real conflicts with officers? Like actual conflicts with people?
Well, I don't know how to explain it. It's more subtle than a direct conflict. No, they didn't yell at me. But
good. Because yeah, people might have gotten mad.
But, oh, they would do things. The guys, the inmates would say, he was disrespecting you. They began to respect. I didn't necessarily feel it was disrespect, but just comments all the time about, well, they're just lying to you. You're so naive. They're just, none of them tell the truth. They all lie. And things like that just drive me insane, because they're not all liars. You know, we all lie at different times. So just because somebody has robbed a bank doesn't mean they're going to lie about something else. I don't know. But,
yeah.
And I thought I kind of knew when people were stretching the truth, and you just pick that up.
Yeah. So are there any former students of yours that really stand out in your mind?
Oh, yeah. And I'm still in touch with some of them. It's very interesting.
That's been a long time.
It has, yeah. I had a lunch last month with a man that was in my very first class.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's really somebody you all should interview. He was later exonerated. He's spent, I think, 9 years in prison, and the Innocence Project found him innocent.
Wow.
So I saw his name, and somebody told me they'd talked to him. And so I said, well, tell him I said hello. And then so we got in touch and had lunch. And that is really an interesting story.
Tell a little bit about it.
Well, I think I'd rather him do that. Well, essentially, he was accused of rape, and he was in my first class, and he didn't do it, and he refused to take the sex offender treatment program, which is required to get out, because he said, I didn't do it, I'm not going to do it. She said, if I stay here all my life, I will. And there was a series that was just fascinating of things that happened that got him out, and then after he got out, he was still... They paroled him without the thing. And then something happened that it was proved he didn't do it. They had lost the rape kit, and he thinks they threw it away. But anyway,
yeah.
But it all worked out. So, but one man that was also in my first class is still in prison now, and totally changed. And
interesting.
Very interesting man. And so whenever I've been in, I've seen him.
Do you still go into the prison system for things?
I haven't been in for about a year, but yes, for a variety of things. I'm working with a reentry project now, and so we've gone in to interview some of the guys before they get out.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done that.
So when you had lunch with the guy who was exonerated, mm-hmm. what did you all talk about?
Well, I wanted to catch up to what he was doing now, but he wanted to talk about the whole situation, what happened, because I hadn't known.
Oh.
I had totally lost touch with him.
But he obviously remembered your class then.
Yep, he remembered way more than I did. He was in that community class I talked about, mm-hmm. and he said he said I had written something special on his paper. I do remember sending his paper to somebody, because it was very interesting and good. It was on the stratification in prisons. So he said he still has the paper that he carried
nice.
Around. And that's the thing. You say any little thing that any of us would say to him as a teacher, and it means so much. I saw one man, I hadn't seen him for years, and he was on the yard. I guess he'd been in and out and all. And he pulled this ragged old note out of his pocket, And he said, this is a note you wrote me that told me that I was doing really well, and I carry it with me all the time to remember. I mean, that just breaks your heart, you know, to think that, that things you've said have made a difference. But right now I'm working, I think I mentioned to you about the project. I did a study back in 94 where they all wrote things, and I was writing a book. And they wrote everything about their lives. It is amazing.
Who's they?
The men at KSR and Luther Luckett. Mm-hmm. And I put it together in a manuscript and never carried it through to the end. But anyway, I'm asking for permission now from Corrections to do a follow-up study. Mm-hmm. And it's heartbreaking to see how many of them, because they talked about their hopes and dreams, that are still incarcerated after all that time, mm-hmm. or have been out and back. And so I'm wanting to find out what's happened to them in between.
So how many did you do this with in 94?
A little over 50. So I'm sure we'll be able to find
them. I was about to say, have you tried to find?
No, I've looked them all up online to see how many are still incarcerated. Mm-hmm. And I know where maybe 6 of them are that are free. So
how many are still incarcerated, do you know? Roughly.
Maybe 10. It's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
19 years. So. Anyway, and they were all college students, and so they all had hopes and dreams of using that someday. And mm-hmm. so life worked and didn't work for some of them.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to some of the ones that have gotten out and it has been helpful for them to have that degree?
Yes. And like I say, I'm still in touch with some of them. I don't think any of them would say, well, a few would, that the degree itself did much for them, but it's what it did for their self-confidence. And then, now like one I know went back to his original job, they rehired him, and then in a short period of time he got to move on as a supervisor because he had that associate's degree. And then a bunch of them have gone on to get college degrees. One went on and got a PhD.
In the college system or outside the college system?
Outside, yeah, once they got out. Several have gotten masters. So it has taken. You know, the education part mm-hmm. took, but to me what's more important is what it did to them inside. And they said it was the coursework that it put them in a different place, but it was also having these outside people come in and treating them like normal human beings. They've said that to me over and over again, that made more of a difference, that once a week somebody would look at them as a real person. So, and of course there were people in the prison. I mean, that's it's kind of a pitiful sounding thing, but it's all very touching, mm-hmm. you know. And I think they almost all want to do better. Not all want to do better, but can't for whatever reason, don't whatever reason, but mm-hmm. it's heartbreaking. Yeah. Either way, it tears you.
Yeah.
It tears you.
I think it is just really interesting how this, you just sort of fell into this and it really has driven
it,
so
it
much
defined
of your
my
life.
Life, to be honest, it has. And then when I retired, I just felt like I had to do something, and so the reentry.
Who are you working on with that? What are you doing with that?
Well, it's at Beargrass Christian Church, and I'm also on the Metro Reentry Task Force, which is the citywide thing. But we just take them one at a time and kind of pair up with them as partners. We got a bunch together. That was another thing that prisons let us do. Well, it was the community corrections. They actually let them come out to our church and talk to our classes. Some, and then some that had gotten out came and talked. And so my Sunday school class, on a day I wasn't there, said, we got to do something about this. And so they formed this little committee. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of led that. And so we met with them and decided what's the best way to help. And we realized we didn't know how the system works. And we still don't, but we walked one through the whole process of getting out, and he said it made such a difference, he didn't know how he could do it without us, so we've just kept doing it. So, just one at a time.
So, was there a particular reason why 2008 was the year you retired?
Well, I was the age where I could, and frankly, I was tired. There were some more changes coming through corrections, and I just said, I don't have any more fight left in me. You know, they called me the bulldog. I'm, I'm small and I just kind of go at things. But I was kind of wearing out. You just know when it's time.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought people should only have a job for 7 years, that they lose their creativity. But we had to reinvent the program so many times that it just kind of kept going.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't stick with my thing. But it just felt time.
So what's going on with it now? Is it still continuing?
Yeah, it is. Elsa Robertson's heading it up. And like I say, it seems to be struggling because of some things internally. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still going. It's all the places. And it's certainly growing in the Dismas facilities and Boulder. So it's plugging along.
Do you get a sense that if there's even community awareness of it, if whether there's still support or whether there's still opposition?
There's always opposition. I mean, people just don't. People like to see everything in black and white, and people are all bad, they think. People are not all bad, nor are people all good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I think there's more sympathy, and there's certainly more talk of rehabilitation now. And the fact that there's a Metro Reentry Task Force, when in the 80s, when we were talking about there was so much anger, they released a person in their uniform. They would drive them down to the bus station and say goodbye. If they didn't have any money in their pocket, so be it. And it was just horrible. I mean, can you imagine being in prison for 12 years and somebody dumps you in the middle of the town and you got no money, no clothes, but a uniform? They take their name off their uniform. I mean, it's just impossible because they used to have their own clothes anyway. Then they put them in uniforms. So now they didn't even have their own clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So, but corrections, and again, the people at the top of corrections are good, caring, intelligent, well-educated people, and I think they've got good things at heart. I don't want to have sounded too negative about it, but they're realizing you can't do that to people and have them. I mean, they were just returning like crazy. So they've changed some of the parole. They don't violate people like they used to and send them back for blinking wrong. While they're not giving them any money, now they're making sure they go to halfway houses. It's still a long ways from being the way they want. And it's also a situation, the people at the top have the right idea,
mm-hmm.
but by the time it gets down to the people at the bottom implementing it, I don't think it's being implemented
mm-hmm.
right. But that they're trying, and they're seeing it as part of their job now. Corrections is taking on releases. So
good.
I think there's good things happening.
Sounds like that you're in the right area right now then.
Yeah.
That, so
yeah. So I hope it goes. It just goes, everything goes in cycles. Who knows what the next cycle will be.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an incredible, it's an incredible service to do that. And it's great that JCC has supported it very intentionally, it sounds like, for so long.
Oh, very much. Ron Horvath was the first, and then Tony Newberry, and those have been the only two for however many years, and just 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Giving release time when everything else is, I keep expecting them to cut some of those positions. There's someone else that's also getting extra things, but they always support it. So, but that comes from them going to those graduations too and seeing what in the world they've got.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But the hats off to them. They just, without them, we couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
So.
Fantastic. Is there anything that we missed from that?
Let me just look through here quickly. I don't think so. That's about it. I'll just leave these notes if anybody can read them.
Okay. If nothing else, it'll help with the names and the dates and things like that. So
I think that's it. It's just a lot of people been involved and a lot of people tried, and it's been a joint project. I think one thing is there's always been a feeling that we're doing it jointly with the men and women.
And they
feel, the inmates.
The inmates.
That they feel involved and appreciative.
That makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does. All right. Well, go ahead and stop this.
Okay.